Well, this week, the S&P 500 has officially hit a new bull market, rising 20% off of its October lows from last year. Of course, there's a lot of enthusiasm still pouring into a small handful of tech stocks, seven or eight in particular, that are driving the major indices higher. But at the same time, the economic data continues to deteriorate. And to discuss this with us today is, as always, our Chief Investment Officer here, Chris Poplava. So, Chris, tell us, what are you seeing from your end when you think about just this big divergence between what we see in the tech stock space and what we're seeing in the economic data?
Well, the stock market is supposed to discount in advance the economic reality that lays ahead of us. So the question is, the strength that we've seen, is this the stock market basically seeing the light at the end of the tunnel? Or is this just a head fake, a bear market bounce before eventually the market rolls over? And it's important to realize, just because the market rallies 20% off a bottom does not mean the bear market is over. A good example of this was the prolonged tech bubble burst of 2000 through 2002. We had a little over about a 22% rally in the spring of 2001. We had further an additional 24% rally in Q3, Q4 of 2001. And we also had about a 24% rally in the summer of 2002 before the ultimate bottom occurred in the October of 2002. But we really didn't get to start picking up strength until the summer of 2003, a year later. So bear market rallies are vicious. They're really strong. And they're very normal of bear markets. Bear markets do not happen in a straight line. So the reason why I believe this is nothing more than a bear market rally is the fact that I don't see the light at the end of the tunnel that the market is supposedly discounting. When I look at the leading economic indicators, they continue to deteriorate. They're not turning up. For example, the Conference Board's LEI bottomed in late 2008, well before the March 2009 bottom. So essentially, the stock market bottomed after leading economic indicators did. So I still think that there's a lot of weakness ahead. And the principal thing, Chris, the reason why I feel that the stock market has not bottomed is we're really missing the catalyst typically associated with new bull markets and coming economic expansions. In particular, there's usually stimulus to fuel the recovery, whether that's monetary stimulus or fiscal stimulus. And we know that fiscal spending is going to be capped, so that's not coming to be a source of stimulus. And when we look at the Fed continues to shrink its balance sheet, withdrawing liquidity from the market. And the Fed, it's still debating, according to some, whether the Fed's going to hike one more time. So we're not dealing with the Fed that is cutting interest rates. And more before we get a cut, most likely the Fed's going to be on pause until it sees the data and inflation data really begin to turn south. And a Fed on pause is not stimulus. And even if they are on pause, you still have them shrinking their balance sheet, which is a lack of stimulus. Instead, that's them taking it away. So those two hallmarks that are typically associated with recoveries in the stock market as well as the economy are clearly absent. And when we study history, Chris, it really argues against the idea that we're in a new bull market and the October bottom of 22 was the bottom. And what I mean by that is when you go all the way back to the Great Depression, we have never, ever seen the stock market bottom before a recession occurs. Not once. It's always bottomed during the recession, roughly around, I would say, two-thirds of the way through the progression of a recession. So you would basically, to call that the bottom, you'd have to say that the U.S. economy does, in fact, skirt a recession. It never happens. We have the proverbial soft landing with no significant deterioration in the employment picture. And off and away we go. This is just kind of like a touch and go. We've had those a few times over the last 10 years, 2015, 16. We've had growth slowdowns that never actually turned into outright recessions. But I just don't see that, Chris, this time around.
Yeah, this was something that Jim Welsh had said in our prior segment, talking about how, I mean, you really have to believe that this time is different, right? That's the psychology that you're going to have to embrace here to think that given the economic data trending where it is, given all of the recessionary models and indicators at the warning levels that they're currently at, in order for that to have been the bottom, the bear market low in October again, and that we're in the midst of a new bull market, I mean, we would really be in uncharted territory.
I would agree, Chris. You know, in the biggest source of support against the recession argument is the labor market, jobs. And we just had last Friday the May payroll figure from the non-farm payrolls, which showed growth of 339,000 jobs. And, you know, what's really important, Chris, to understand is that part of that is an estimation of businesses that are created and destroyed. So that's called the birth-death model. And the government basically, to look forward, looks backwards, and they kind of project that out, which means they're going to miss turning points. They're going to overestimate at tops, and they're going to underestimate at bottoms. But the government also does another survey, which is called the household survey, where they literally pick up the phone and call households to see if people are working or not. And in complete contrast to the explosive job growth we saw from the non-farm payroll report, the household survey showed a net loss of 310,000 jobs. I mean, it was the complete polar opposite. You know, the non-farm payrolls report showed a growth of 339,000. The household survey showed a loss of 310. I mean, literally night and day. And we get a lot more data, Chris, when we look at the household survey. And one of the things that I'm kind of noticing is a consistent trend is that we are seeing a loss. The loss in jobs we are seeing is coming from college graduates, so those with some college or an associate's degree. And we're continuing to see growth in those with a high school diploma or no high school diploma. So essentially, that's service, right? The service economy continues to have a labor shortage, which is where the strength is, while we're seeing a loss in white-collar jobs, those with college education. Now, the reason why this is significant is think of the income that someone without a high school diploma or with only a high school diploma receives versus someone with a college degree. So it's not an apples-to-apples comparison. So when you think of the net aggregate income, I believe in hindsight, we're going to see that we are losing a net aggregate income as those that are losing their jobs earn more than those that are growing their jobs. And so, you know, another key distinction, Chris, to be aware of is the non-farm payrolls is looking at employment from a business standpoint. So they're basically looking at businesses and how many employees they have, while the household sector is looking from the employee standpoint. So when you look at, for example, the government calling households and they call someone and they ask, are you working? And they said, well, yes, but I had my hours cut at Target. So now I'm also working a second job part-time at Starbucks. Well, they said, okay, well, you're working. You have two jobs, but you're still working. Now, from the employer standpoint, if they look at Target, they see that employee. And if they look at Starbucks, they also see that employee. So it looks like you have two different jobs when you're really the same person working two jobs part-time to make a full-time work. So there's some key distinctions there, essentially. And that's partly why it gets it wrong at turning points at the peak. Because when businesses start to lose revenue and they start to have their profit margins hurt and the economy begins to slow, they do several things as an employer. One, they cut hours. Then they also start to cut temporary workers. Those are the least trained, least experienced of their staff. And so as you start to have your hours cut, you then look for additional jobs. And that's all these are the hallmarks leading into recession, which we see presently. We are seeing the average work week decline. That's one of the Conference Board's 10 leading economic indicators is the average work week. We're seeing temporary payrolls actually decline on an annual basis. And we're seeing more and more people working part-time due to economic reasons. So to me, Chris, I think what we're going to see in hindsight is that the government's non-farm payroll report is going to be heavily revised down in time. And it will show that we are probably, it may be already in recession. That was something I remember very vividly, Chris, in 2008. In the spring of 2008, we were still debating whether or not we are in recession. The S&P was rallying in the spring, I think something like 15%. A lot were saying that the bear market was over. And with the Fed cutting interest rates, housing was going to bottom and off to the races we were going to be. But in fact, that was just the opposite. We were basically just taking a pause in a protracted economic downturn and bear market. And I think that's what we have facing ahead of us today.
Well, Chris, as you said in the opening there, you know, we've seen multiple over 20% rallies in the S&P 500 in the past within the midst of a bear market, particularly if we think about what happened after the tech bubble. I think you said there was like two or even three instances where we saw rallies of 20% or more. So just given the fact that we have seen a 20% rally now this week off of the October lows is not itself a sign that we're in a new bull market, long-term bull market, that we could be still in the midst of a longer protracted bear market, which is what the economic data is again saying. When you look at the leading economic indicators, when you look at the fact that the Fed is tightening, there's a number of things that we'll still pick through in today's discussion. But help us understand the difference historically for what leads to a soft landing. That's not a recession, just a growth slowdown, which is what the bulls are, of course, really hoping for and believing that we're going to see, versus a hard landing, which is an actual outright recession. What are the characteristics that lead to one versus the other?
Well, one of the ingredients is inflation. And the second one is how aggressive the Federal Reserve is during its interest rate hiking cycle. And then a third common component is what banks are doing. So just because the Federal Reserve is tightening doesn't mean necessarily commercial banks are tightening. They might be easing lending standards, which helped kind of grease the wheel of the economy. So the kind of three key factors that lead to a slowdown in the economy without the result of a recession or a significant rise in the unemployment rate are typically preceded by low inflation, mild gradual increases in the federal funds rate by the Fed, and also relaxed lending standards by banks. In contrast, the kind of three common characteristics we see that occur leading into recession are periods of high inflation, aggressive interest rate hikes by the Fed, and tightening lending standards by banks. And when we look at those three key factors, Chris, they check off on the recession side, all three of them. We've had high inflation, we've had a very aggressive Fed, and we are having commercial banks tightening lending standards across the board for all types of loans, whether we're looking at credit cards, real estate, commercial industrial lending, you name it. They're all showing signs of tightening as banks pull back.
So again, you really would have to think that this time is different in order for this to be the beginning of a newer long-term bull market from here.
Exactly, Chris. Particularly when we look at inflation. And I've got data going all the way back to the roaring 1920s. There have only been four instances where inflation exceeded 5% without a recession. And all of them were occurring during a strong economy. So yes, we had high inflation, but we still had high economic growth that prevented the inflation from causing or leading towards a recession. So we had a couple of those during the 1930s when FDR was stimulating the economy after the Great Depression. We had two instances during the 1940s through a booming wartime economy. And then in early 1951, we had inflation over 5%, but GDP growth or gross domestic product was growing at over 10%. Now, when we look at the current cycle, last year inflation peaked just under 10%. And when we look at economic growth on a year-over-year basis, it came in at 1.6% in the first quarter. So relative to 2022's first quarter. So we have the high inflation, but unfortunately, Chris, in the instances of a soft landing with high inflation, we do not have the strong growth that we're typically seeing during those periods. And also in the soft landings that we have seen previously, they were seen with a gradual Fed hike. A couple examples of that were in the mid-1980s. In the mid-1990s, the Federal Reserve hiked rates by roughly 3% from the lows and then went on a pause or even cut interest rates. When you look at the present situation, Chris, I mean, we came from zero to over 5%. So we're up 5 percentage points off the bottom. So clearly well above what we typically see in prior soft landings. And the speed at which the Fed has raised rates is even faster than those other instances. So a very aggressive Fed hiking campaign, high inflation with low nominal growth. And when we look at the lending standards by banks, as I was mentioning, that is also showing tightening across the board. So we're simply missing all of the hallmarks, Chris, that lead to a soft landing. And I think really the only reason why we're debating this is when we're looking at a few handful of stocks, as well as looking at the lagged impact of the non-farm payroll report, which, as I mentioned, is really severely flawed at turning points in the economy. When we look at continuing claims, we are seeing a significant percentage of states with sharply rising annual rates of change in continuing claims. Currently, we're almost at 40%, so we're talking about half the country, Chris, is seeing a significant jump in continuing claims from a year ago. And this is a strongly characteristic scene during and leading into recession. So we're well past that kind of warning line, which is, let's say, maybe 15% of states are seeing rising continuing claims. We're, as I mentioned, just under 40%. So we're, as I mentioned, Chris, we have all the signs of leading into a recession. And, you know, in recessions, the surprises are on the downside. So when you ultimately get data revisions, they're usually revised lower. And same thing when you finally turn the corner and you're into a new economic expansion, the surprises are to the upside where economic data is revised higher. So what I think we're going to see in the coming months, Chris, is that a lot of this data that we've seen will be revised sharply lower.
You know, it's interesting, Chris, because anecdotally, I just had a lunch meeting with one of my friends that I haven't seen in a while. And you know, typically they're not really big investors in the stock market, but one of the first things they asked me is about AI-related tech stocks and how much higher can it go. That is, for me, a sign that sentiment has gotten quite bullish. So, you know, I just wonder, because as these tech stocks are, again, powering higher in some cases to new all-time highs, but, you know, investors are looking at tech stocks just racing up. And again, the economic data backdrop continues to deteriorate. What would you say to investors when they're facing, you know, this divergence of wanting just a FOMO, you know, chase these tech stocks higher?
Well, Chris, I definitely am getting a sense of greed coming back into the market. And we're seeing that in the data. When we look at the AAII, so that's the American Association of Individual Investors, the percent bulls is at the highest level since late 21, early 22, when the market was peaking. So, and then also when we look at the percent bears, is less than 25%. So we've clearly seen a pickup in greed. And Chris, honestly, during bear markets, you typically see temporary bottoms when you kind of get to really washed out sentiment levels, the market's oversold, everyone is bearish, and then the market tends to work its way higher. The bear market rallies that we've seen in the past historically begin to peter out when sentiment becomes bullish again, when the money gets pulled back in the market and there's less of it on the sidelines to come back in before things finally roll over again. And I think that's where we're at. I mean, I really would draw the analogy to the spring of 2008, where sentiment began to pick up, the hopes of a soft landing with the Fed now cutting interest rates would prevent a recession before we actually rolled over. I think we're getting there. I mean, just when you look at the hard data, it's not getting better. It's getting worse. I mean, we just had S&P Global's May bankruptcy statistics for publicly traded companies with at least $2 million in assets or liabilities. And what we found was that the May filings brought their five-month total to 286 bankruptcy filings. That is the most since 2010, more than double the filings of the same period last year, which was around 138. So we've had a huge and significant increase in bankruptcies. And Chris, this is what we're well, you know, known, is that monetary policy impacts the economy with a lag. So a lot of these bankruptcies are companies with debt that is coming due and being refinanced at significantly higher interest rates where they simply cannot afford the interest. And they're declaring bankruptcy or defaulting on their debt. So we're seeing this sharp pickup, which makes sense given the sharp rise in the Federal Reserve hiking campaign.
You know, it's interesting, the average home buyer now, given where mortgage rates are at and home prices, that basically average home buyer can now afford essentially like a $350,000 house. Maybe if you're looking at some places in the Midwest, there's places like that for that price. I mean, not on the coast, definitely not. Not here in San Diego or California. I mean, you'd be getting maybe a condo for that. So home buyer affordability is still atrocious.
It is, Chris. I mean, look at a 30-year fixed rate mortgage. It's back above 7%. Now, again, these are the things I was mentioning, Chris, that are typically associated with renewed economic expansions are catalysts. One of the biggest catalysts is falling interest rates, because that tends to spur a housing recovery, which is one of the most early leading economic indicators around. So when interest rates drop, it makes housing more affordable. People start buying homes. You start having a turnover in home sales, which then leads to a recovery in housing stocks like Home Depot and Lowe's, where you have remodeling, which then leads to more jobs. So there's a real ripple effect when interest rates bottom that really helps to fuel the lending of the next economic expansion. Further, we tend to see a significant drop in commodity prices to help bring down inflation. And we have seen oil fall from the highs of last year, but at $70 a barrel, it's still fairly elevated, and gasoline prices across the country are still relatively elevated from, let's say, 2 years ago. So we've seen some improvement, obviously, in energy prices, but not as dramatic as you typically see during recession. So we're still kind of missing that catalyst. And obviously, with the Federal Reserve not cutting interest rates yet, that ingredient is still missing. So we have high home prices with high mortgage rates, and the Federal Reserve still with high short-term rates. We just simply do not have the catalyst to help fuel the next expansion, which is why, again, with such tight constraints on economic growth, with high inflation and high and elevated interest rates, I just do not see the signs and catalysts for turning the corner, and why I still feel we will be falling into recession in the coming months.
So again, you know, after the tech bubble collapse, we saw during that period of the bear market from 2000 to 2002, you know, there are multiple 20% rallies in the S&P 500. And so even though we have seen now a 20% rally in the S&P from the October bottom, we have to keep in mind that we've seen this before, you know, investors racing back into these sentiment-driven rallies around a narrative. In this case, it's really all around artificial intelligence and in the tech stocks. But at the same time, you know, if you're looking at the fundamental data, it's telling a different story, that the drivers, the fundamental drivers and underpinnings for the market are continuing to worsen and not get better. So, you know, when we look back through history, you said going back all the way to the Great Depression, the main thing that is delineated, whether or not we've seen a soft landing or a hard landing recession, is whether or not we've seen inflation spike to the levels that we saw, whether the Fed has hiked rates this aggressively, and whether banks have tightened at the current levels that we see. All three of those are consistent, and which we see today, with hard landing recessions that we've seen in the past. So, I mean, to reiterate the point, you really have to believe this time is going to be different. Perhaps, you know, AI is going to save us from a recession with this massive productivity boom. You got to put a lot of hope and faith into these tech stocks and AI if the environment is going to change rapidly from here.
You know, Chris, when you look at Apple's sales, or you look at Nvidia's sales, and you look at their growth year over year, they track the economy. I mean, think about it. These tech companies, they have to sell to someone, right? They have to sell to businesses, they sell to products to consumers. Well, if you're losing your job, you're not going to be able to afford to buy these products that these tech companies are selling. And same thing, if your business is suffering, you're not going to be able to expand your IT budget and really start to implement artificial intelligence. So, you know, that's something to really bear in mind, Chris, is that these companies are not immune to the business cycle. And if the business cycle is still pointing south, then I think in hindsight, these high elevated prices of these tech companies is going to be looked at in hindsight as a phenomenal selling opportunity for those who didn't get out earlier.
Yeah, and that was something that Gina Martin-Adams, chief market strategist at Bloomberg, she had mentioned when we spoke with her a couple weeks back, is that, I mean, when you look at the tech stocks, they're really expanding on price multiples. That is, they're getting more and more expensive, and the earnings situation needs to play catch up. And it's a question of whether or not that is going to happen, especially, again, as we've been discussing, the economic backdrop continues to deteriorate.
And Chris, too, I think, you know, part of the reason why I think we need to be careful about this huge move in tech with AI, Goldman Sachs does a really good job. They came out with an AI warning. They said, "We caution that the timing and ability of firms to generate incremental profits from AI is uncertain, and therefore think that the potential benefits from AI are unlikely to be fully priced by investors in the near term. We also see potential limits on S&P 500 index upside from policy responses to AI that could constrain the ability of companies to generate additional profits. Near-term economic growth dynamics and euphoric growth expectations that history suggests ultimately may not be realized. Indeed, during the dot-com boom, many of the fastest-growing companies were unable to meet optimistic investor expectations, leading to a collapse in valuations. So that does kind of correlate with what Gina Martin Adams was saying regarding AI.
So, Chris, I think the main story here is that, no, we do not think this time is different, that investors definitely need to be looking at the broad range of data and supports for the stock market. That is the fundamental and economic data, which you have been showing and writing to clients, pointing that the situation continues to worsen, not get better. And especially, these are the things that we need to look at in order to get more bullish. And we're not seeing those signals come in yet. So tech stocks are pushing higher. It does appear to be unjustified by the fundamentals, and that can only persist for so long, like we saw in the post-tech bubble bear market, which it does appear that we are still in. Once again, we've been speaking with our Chief Investment Officer here at Financial Sense Wealth Management, Chris Poplava. Chris, we look forward to speaking with you in another 2 weeks.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.